Some people online there. Any questions, comments on all right, moving on to the next item. Discussion on proposals for received field responders.
So I sent out all of the proposals for everybody to take a look at. And I think we need an answer today. But I thought it would be a good opportunity for the members to discuss what their feelings were. If they had an opportunity to review those, ask any questions that the other members might be able to answer. And I've seen the administration set up to prepare those for us. So just really want to open the door up. Who's had a chance to read them? Got questions on what they say. Somebody's already got a person that they like. So,
Given Cameron's confession, I want to make sure. First of all, I was retired before they put this together, but my intent has been to abstain from voting on this. And obviously, I have some bias towards the city. Pasco Fire and that kind of thing. So I do want to put that out there. My intention has been all along to abstain from voting. And Pasco, actually, I was talking to the city manager on the way over, and they're considering maybe withdrawing, but at this point, we're going to kind of leave it on the table. But the concern that they have is lacking the filtering facility. We don't want to get too far ahead on the response. They don't want to get too far ahead on the responder program and not have anywhere to take.
Matt, here, I just had a couple of questions after reviewing, the budget. We didn't give a budget template, it looks like, and we're just getting, budget estimates back for this, and some discrepancies among them with understanding about is rent included, is not rent included, are vehicles included, are vehicles not included, and so therefore there's some pretty significant disparity in the proposals, right, because we didn't include or we did include, and so I think it's important that we get that narrowed down, or at least don't let that be a limiting factor of the decision makers really paying attention to not just the numbers of the budget, which I'm sure we wouldn't do.
I really liked that there was the inclusion or the option for the nurse practitioner, that the Pasco Fire and Awareness was willing to add to that. That's really important. It's
possible prescriber.
Yes.
Maybe going forward, if people need a little more time, I think we have some help. Maybe you can answer the day. And people want to take a chance to read through them, then you can email either Nicole or myself if you have questions that we can then work on getting addressed so that we're not waiting until the next meeting to start working on forms together, some of those kind of things. If you want to email those comments to us, and we can work through addressing those to be prepared to start making a decision as well.
Do we have kind of an evaluation template that whether it's a small group or a large group, needs to use to make sure features are covered, or?
I think that maybe was what we didn't discuss is, do we want to have the past we've used, maybe subcommittees to evaluate these and come back with a formal recommendation? That's an option the committee could do is between now and next meeting, there could be a small group of people who evaluated these and came back with a recommendation.
So I didn't read the RFQ. I have to confess, getting ready to retire, thinking I'd be moving on, but until that gets done. So did it, Pasco's proposal, it was the first time I saw it when you emailed it out, Matt, but so that to me there was a significant difference in the formats of the three proposals. And did the RFQ require them to give you the information that Pasco went, the detail they went to in terms of how they're going to supply vehicles and office space and dispatching and radios and phones, and were those kind of things spelled out, or do we need to step back so the other two providers have an opportunity to detail their proposals out similar?
So what we sent out was just more of a request for anyone who's interested, and they didn't outline anything
okay.
that they had to submit, just if you're interested, submit a plan or what this program would look like if you were able to do it.
Okay.
But I know that we had talked about in this committee that the funding that we were going to pay for was the cost of the staff. And so we didn't talk anything about vehicles or computers or radios or anything like that. We had just said that we were going to pay for the cost of the staff. So I think that we all read the proposals. There is an extreme difference in price. And so I think if we are going to agree as a committee that we will pay for cars and we will pay for computers and we will pay for phones, that we need to allow the other two to redo theirs because they didn't include any of that in their cost.
So that would be good for the subgroup to get together and look at each one and say, okay, go back and you know, say, all right, we have three parties who are interested. Let's now try to get the proposals on a level playing field for evaluation. We go back and give each of them the opportunity to answer some, or add some additional information.
I would also really like to know more about the training that they require, two of them. You know, more specific about the training, and one wasn't, and especially for the peer staff, I would like to know what kind of training that they're going to be required to have to do this.
I think now that would get fleshed out in more formal RFP where we would identify these are other things that you can speak. And it was, I think it was just a call for interest, of course, what I would look at, what was sent out. So I understand why we had the disparity in. This was included, this was not included. Why people probably interpreted that very differently.
So, is there do we want to any more discussion or questions related to proposals?
I think we need to decide if we do want to allow those extra costs first, decide. What do we really want to pay for? So when we first talked about it, it was just the cost of the staff. And then we would cover all the costs of the staff. So I think we need to, if we're going to change what we're willing to pay for, we should outline that in this meeting and then move forward with either putting out a more formal request or at least allow the other two individuals to resubmit their proposals and then interview them. I'm not sure how we want to go about it, but first we need to decide what do we really want to do.
So does it get to the kind of the sequencing problem that Chief Gear referenced there, where if there's an existing set of services that are tied to a facility that staff would pay for these services could leverage off of, that's a very different proposition than something that were to happen now or soon where they would need to provision, and we would potentially need to pay for the provisioning of all of that, you know, facilities, hardware, comms, infrastructure, everything like that. I mean, that's like order of magnitude different costs.
Right. Well, and that's, right? Well, initially when we agreed as a committee what this is a field responder that would respond and then like disseminate the person, so they either go to crisis or they either go to fire, or they either go to law enforcement. They weren't providing any services essentially to the individual. They were providing a service to law enforcement, fire, so that they would not have to be going out to the community and taking every single call. So when we talked about it at first as our committee, we just wanted those individuals to be field responders. So when a call came to 911, they could send it to them. They could evaluate and see which direction does this individual need to go, and then send it to the appropriate person that's needed. So I don't know what services would be provided. If more than that, we would just need to flesh that out because that's different than what we originally had come up with.
Building off of Chief Gear's comment, we've been, you know, this has been the problem in the Tri-Cities for many years. There's no place to take people. So if I don't know if there's any way to accelerate or to give preference in your engineering selection to the contractor that will get this done the fastest. That would be helpful because we're all waiting for the place to take.
Which process are you talking about? We have multiple processes.
I was talking about the whole recovery center. design build for that is now projected out to late 2025. It would be wonderful if there were any way to pull that.
We've had some discussions with the contractors on how that they should be looking at not necessarily a one delivery date, but phasing delivering services when they can, not necessarily trying to do it all in one shot.
Is having the soap, at least the sobering facility, sobering services available, really continuing? That is a requirement to be in place really before this service exists, correct? Because if there's nowhere to transport them, besides jail, then that's long worse time.
Well, yeah, all we're doing is adding a third responder that has nowhere to take them.
Exactly.
Where we have two responders that don't have anywhere to take them right now, now we're going to add a third one.
But I don't think the goal was to have them take them somewhere. The goal initially was just to alleviate the time of first responders so that you guys were not using all of your time responding to community calls that weren't appropriate. So we were never talking about this individual staff transporting anywhere. We were never talking about them taking anyone anywhere. It was just a field responder to assist law enforcement.
But
you can't
just walk away.
No, you wouldn't, but you would connect them to the right person. So you would call crisis if they needed an evaluation. You would call law enforcement if they needed.
So if EMS has a guy at 4th and Lewis who obviously shouldn't be standing there because he's going to walk out into traffic, we call law enforcement. They still don't have anywhere to take him. He hasn't committed a crime. He's not medically necessary to go to the hospital. We have them right now. We have them every day. We have people that have to go somewhere, and the hospital says, nope, we're not taking them. They've trespassed here, and PD is, so they're sitting in the back of the ambulance or the back of the police car.
Well, I can 100% agree with you, but that I'm just saying that's not what this particular program was. That's more like what we're doing at the recovery center and why we're building it. But law enforcement wanted just somebody right now where we could have a field responder to help alleviate the stress and the burden placed on first responders. So that's what this is. All everything you just said, Bob, we need that. I completely agree with you.
So Cindy, what I had kind of been when I first heard this, and I didn't sit then, but what I've seen in other areas and other states is, so that call comes in for we'll call it a behavioral health call. The first responder gets dispatched and they go out there. These first responders have also been trained and certified in mental health, first aid, and CPR. They've also been trained in de-escalation tactics. They work with that person. Hopefully they're able to get that person somewhat back to reality, get them grounded, perhaps work with them, get outpatient services set up, get it set up for them to be able to go in and have an assessment and be treated. Could that work each time, every time, and then not need to be transported? No, absolutely not. But if we could even cut that by a third, that's a third less of the time the law enforcement's got to go over there and try to deal with these individuals and try to find somewhere for them to go. That was kind of where my thought process was when I heard the program.
Yeah, I was in line with where Jason was. That we all recognize that this is going to help 100% of the people. There is a percentage of the calls that law enforcement and EMS are going to that could potentially be resolved in the field. But this would be able to solve that. And the next step would be to add the sobering centers, so that you get a higher percentage of people. And the final step is the recovery centers, that we should be able to help just about everybody.
Would this program need to be scalable when the other services come up? Meaning, if we said we're just doing staff, and the entity said, okay, they're going to work from their home, we're going to supply them with a laptop and mileage reimbursement, that's it, right? And that was a cost the facility was willing to take on, and then they received the additional cost for preventative care and staffing, right? Does that, once the sobering service does open up, right, does that particular program need to be prepared to then start transport? And then what is that? You know, I'm just
then you have to look at safe transports too. Like,
absolutely.
Right now, I know that NCRs won't transport anyone in their car. Staff at agencies are not allowed to transport in their car. So even if there is a car and a place to take them, there's going to be rules and laws around transport in general.
And so that's what I'm saying is that I'm really wanting to have a good idea of what exactly we are asking in this program, and does it have to be scalable once services open up, because that may be a totally different response and proposal.
I think it could be scalable. I think the other thing is for detox in, they could have that transport unit. So maybe not have to be a district of people. Maybe this group of people goes out, they call, hey, we got this person here, they're intoxicated, we need you to send out to pick this person out. So I mean, there's a couple different approaches.
Yeah. Or even if this team is working in conjunction with law enforcement, even a law enforcement officer would be able to transport if they're going voluntarily, whereas an individual in their personal car would not be able to. So there's options, yes.
Glad you guys got that.
The problem with the law enforcement doing transports is the size of our resources.
Yeah.
That's the reason. If we have these other organizations that come out, do the contacts and do the transports, we're out there on safety trying to make sure that we're good with our service.
Yeah.
So if we tie it up just like medical EMS and stuff, there's resources taken off the street that when robbery occurs or you know, whatever, we're not able to respond.
So Chief Michael's response fits that solution then.
Yes.
The response comes, it's a pickup program, not a drop-off program. And then, but we have to be sure that we're putting that into the future RFPs as we're designing those programs.
Correct, yeah, and those models exist today that are already doing that work. I think the other thing for that too is we'll have to make sure that they're medically cleared to be in that facility. So there would need to be some kind of level of the ability to evaluate when they get there also, or then you introduce a different problem. If when they show up at the facility, then fire has to come and evaluate, are you okay medically to be at the facility? So a couple different things to evaluate like that, and we can kind of build that out.
So, as we're talking about the hands, so we have right now three people who are interested in providing that service. They obviously gave us three different answers on what that would look like, but we didn't give them any. We were just asking more who's interested, right? Not necessarily give us the detailed plan. So my suggestion to the committee, and I'm not a member, it's just my suggestion, that we probably ought to have a group of people from this committee narrow down what it is we want this service to do, and then go back to those three people who submitted and say, okay, now take what you gave us and detail it more to fit what we're doing. It sounds like there's a lot of questions that need to be answered here between the committee. It might be easier to do that as a smaller subgroup than get down to what difficult to be. And things like, does it need to be scalable? I think the answer is it's going to change as we bring on new services. The role of whatever this is going to change.
Right.
Absolutely, it's going to have to. So that would be my recommendation to the committee is consider doing that, because I think we may get a lot farther, a lot faster with that one.
And one other thought that I had, Matt, we could, you or I could either reach out to Pima County or the hospital down there that we went to and see if we could get copies of the original RFPs that went out that RI responded to, and to do this exact thing. Kind of work or that they responded to down in Pima County. And it will at least give us a good starting point to build our request for proposal up.
You know, I will say Pasco's proposal is based on what they're doing now, 40 hours a week, and, you know, with vehicles, with radios, with phones. So it's grounded somewhat into the delivery system, and then it's expanded to try and do that 7 days a week for additional hours across two counties.
Cindy, do you guys do does GCPH do an RFP for the crisis response teams?
Do we do what?
Do you do an RFP for the crisis?
No, we don't. We just select the provider.
Other questions. There we go. Discussion or questions. There we go.
I make a motion that we put together a subcommittee that would put together an RP that would refine what we're looking for the field response.
Okay, there's motions. Is there a second?
I second that.
Second. Any discussion on the motion to create a subcommittee to, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Yeah, that would develop an RP that would speak to the what specifically we're looking at for the response teams, the field response teams.
Okay, for the field response teams to bring back to the committee next month? Or
that might be fast. Be a little bit aggressive, maybe it might give us maybe a couple meetings, maybe.
Okay.
This report.
A draft.
Yes. Yes.
A draft by the next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just think it's important that if anyone has feelings or opinions on this, they be part of the subcommittee, because there was only a few of us who were met the first time, and so I think anybody who wants to discuss this should be part of the subcommittee. Who should they tell?
You can email me or Matt, either one. All right. No discussion. Let's call for the vote. Those in favor of the motion to create a subcommittee to develop an RFP for the field responders and present a draft to the committee next meeting, vote in favor of that by saying aye. Those opposed? None opposed? The motion carries. All right. Next item. Oh, should we? Yeah, that's right. Wants to be on the committee. All right, Erica, Jason, Aaron, Chad, and Sandy. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Oh, Kim. Sorry, I missed Kim. Yeah, 9 months. Did you get those? All right. Any objection to that? All right. We'll move on to the next item. Discussion on naming recovery center. In the last meeting, we had narrowed it down. We had this great conversation about where we were going to go with the naming of the recovery center and the court club.
Racket club,
whatever. Their name is going to end up being very similar to the name that we settled on. And so we're back to a discussion on naming of the recovery center. And many of you participated in the email chain on that. So you're probably already aware of ins and outs of that. So I'm opening it up to discussion on the naming of the recovery center.
So just to maybe summarize the email discussion, there was good back and forth about the unlikely scenario that there would be any legal liability associated with the name that we chose. This was more of a community goodwill concession than any kind of legal challenge we might expect. That being said, it did raise for me what, you know, something I felt last month while we were in the discussion, but which I didn't voice then because, you know, we've somehow in a group of 17 magically got to a name that was pretty dang good and everybody agreed on, and it's like, okay, let's move forward. You know, we don't need to bog everything down in committee. That said, you know, this kind of branding discussion is, I mean, it's almost a cliche how much of a nightmare it is to try to do in groups of people this big. And, you know, it's like we dodged a bullet that first time. And if we're going to go back to the well, then I would reiterate what I've shared in the email, which is just like we're doing with the RFP, that we form a subcommittee, that subcommittee takes all this suggestions over a period of the next 2 weeks from everyone in the group and even from the community, and that subcommittee does their work to distill it down to what they see as the top three that we bring back for a vote next month. And then we deal with it. And with some reasoning behind why, hey, these are our top three for these reasons. You know, we had 17. Here's some of the criteria we were using. I've been through this process a couple times in businesses, and I've seen it go well, and I've seen it go badly. And so, you know, I think we, with this group, will be able to, a month from now, have a name that everybody, well, maybe not everybody, but 90% of people and the community will be happy. Let's take that approach. And I don't think that we have driving reason to try to act before then, right? From conversations that I've had, if it's August before we settle in on a name from a grant perspective or from a fundraising perspective, that's not going to kill us, right? My thoughts.
I think that's excellent.
I'm happy to serve.
Other discussion or questions?
So, motion to form a naming subcommittee?
Go for it. That's what we'll create a committee.
Yeah.
I'll probably need a little more verbiage than that.
Motion to create, create a committee that will come up with the names for the Behavioral Health Center.
I second it.
And seconded, any discussion on the motion to create a subcommittee to name the Recovery Center? Any discussion? No discussion. Call for the vote. Those in favor of creating a committee to name the Recovery Center with John as the chair, say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion carries. And who else besides John would like to do that? Shell?
I'll be on it too.
Aaron? Any objections to those? All right, we've reached time for public comments again. Another short meeting.
BJ, so any names we like should be sent to John.
Send them to John.
Yes,
absolutely. I think the guidance to get a committee is just what we just said. We don't want you to, we don't want you to have a name. I think it's good to come back with the three names.
Yep.
So within 2 weeks, get those names. And if there's people that you've talked to that have suggestions, send names.
Yep, funnels my way.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Excellent. All right, enter into public comment section of our business again. Any in there that have a recommendation? Yes, and I didn't have you identify who you were the first time.
I'm Nancy, responsible job. So, as a Franklin County resident, I'm just curious about how the committee proceeds with a suggestion like Pamela's, because I thought it was so great, and I don't know what happens now.
I think that it would be good for the chair or one of the county administrators to receive some more information about what she's talking about, and then possibly invite her to do a presentation.
That's what we've done before. We had the jail came and did a presentation on a proposal they had. And so I think that's probably what the process should be. So we have a better idea of what exactly they do and how much they're asking for.
So maybe next month she should come with more of a formal presentation budget request specifically that's for.
We'll have to figure out what the agenda is for next month. But yes, that is potentially. But we'll she can get us the contact information. We'll reach out to them.
It does remind me, though. I think we've talked the last couple of meetings about the generation of some you know, high level budget type information that will help us to be able to evaluate these types of service requests or funding opportunities that come around the set.
I mean, the biggest one we have that's just an unknown at this point is what is the contract with Comprehensive going to cost? And so we had our first meeting with them at the end of June, and so they're getting us some information, and we continue that, and we're going to continue to have those conversations. So I hate to put numbers out there without knowing how that's going to look, and they can't give us a great number right now again, so we have distilled down exactly what services are looking for having there beyond what Medicare, Medicaid, and state funds pay for themselves.
So along those lines, I was really glad to hear those conversations proceeding, and it seems like, you know, in addition to high-level budget numbers that would be useful at this stage for a few reasons, another possible output of those conversations from Comprehensive could be, you know, that high-level services and sequencing and where it all sort of fits together model, it doesn't have to be set in stone, but, you know, when we have these conversations, for example, about where the, you know, whether this service needs to be scalable and what it's going to scale into, right? Sorry, I just dropped my pen on to just have the 90% vision of, like, yeah, we think it's going to fit. There's still room for things to change, but we think it's going to fit right here in May of next year. That kind of it feels like we're getting closer to where they're going to be able to do that for us. And it's hard in a group of 17 where nobody's tagged as the architect of the whole thing to, you know, set that vision. But we're real close to being able to have that. That's part of, I think, the guidance that they can give us, right?
And that's what we're trying to do, as we get further along, even if we get to it's important, some sort of ballpark estimate, that'll give us a good idea to be able to come back and say, okay, this is where we expect we're going to be conservatively, and then we can then start having conversations about, okay, if it is this much, how much left is that? Plus, we're going to have to start having conversations with them, along with the design build team that we had meetings today with the two design build team firms that we narrowed that down to. Getting them to be part of that conversation and start talking to us about schedules. When can we really realistically expect to see some of these services open up? Because we saw today that they had the expectation that they would just build the whole thing all on one date. I think we got at least one of the teams to understand, no, it doesn't have to happen that way. It probably shouldn't happen that way. Every one of these could stand alone and operate alone. So that now becomes a conversation with Comprehensive. It starts to get, we should be able to start to get better answers to what we're talking about. So when could we expect to have a sobering center or a detox facility? Or, you know, and then at some point, when do we think it realistically will all the time? I think we're going to see that team, or at least one of the teams, come back and give us that proposal of break it off into pieces and get what services they can done sooner rather than later. But then that also plays into the provider side as to whether or not they're ready to staff and do those. So there's a lot of moving parts trying to keep going, keep driving on that. And then we got the funding piece that goes along with that. So
I think we also have to keep in mind we prioritize services too already. So the sobering center, field response to use, the facility, those were all priorities too. So I think once we get those pieces put together, then you can look at what is left for maybe some of those additional services. But there are already had like 8 services that we've already identified. These are pretty high priorities, so we don't need to press for any of those.
We'll start pulling that together. I can tell you how much money's coming in. I can send that out to everybody, but it doesn't give you the full picture unless you know what we expect to go out, and we don't want to commit funds that we know will have to be at least prioritized.
Well, and it also, you know, there's a lot of complexity to what services can be reimbursed and at what level and all of this. So even knowing what's in that pot doesn't necessarily give the full picture of what might be left over,
right,
or available once.
That's where we started the conversation with comprehensive is let's start talking about basically what I think what we had discussed last is let's talk about what services can you provide that are reimbursable under house funds other than the county. And we're going to start there because that stuff they could get paid from somebody else. Now there are probably services that there are services we've talked about it in this room that are not reimbursable. And that's what we need to be paying for. So we're going to start with, you know, comprehensive and a list of what they feel like is services that we are asking for that are reimbursable and that we can go from that point to the next.
As we're discussing this, I just want to let you all know a couple things. Maybe you've already heard these things, but in case you haven't, just to keep in mind, in the last month to month and a half, we've had two inpatient facilities in the state closed due to funding. We've had a third one that is potentially closing. They're in negotiations with the healthcare authority. There's a long-term care facility on the other side of the state that just terminated their contract with the healthcare authority because they're not paying them enough. And that's a facility that has 100 beds for individuals that are on long-term holds for 90 to 180 days. And so now they're not going to have those beds for those individuals. They also just... The state was just sued and lost a lawsuit for $100 million. And if you look at the language of the lawsuit, it's saying that Eastern State Hospital has to discharge all of their civil individuals that are on civil commitments in the next 90 days. That's over 100 individuals. So there's a lot going on, and a lot of facilities across the state are closing because of funding. And so I just want to make sure that as we're building this facility, that we number one, really look at costs, and we might have to look at paying more than we want to pay for things because we don't want to build this amazing place that closes because we can't afford to keep it open. Oh, and then there's another ENT evaluation treatment center that just announced Monday that they're closing because of funding in Grace around the other side of the state as well.
Were those two that you first mentioned, were those substance use?
Or no, inpatient psychiatric, and then there was another youth facility that had two locations, one in Spokane and one on the other side of the state, that had the Department of Health restricted their license away, and they're not allowed to provide services anymore, and all those youth had to be discharged. So there's just a lot going on around the state right now, and a lot of facility closures.
That's a primary concern for being in the county's perspective.
Yeah.
Make sure that they don't hold it more. By not more than
I'd like to also, that's very serious. That's very concerning. I'd like to say we're not a funding body. We don't have a budget. And I'm not sure it's appropriate for us to consider funding requests from other entities. So we could get a plethora of requests, and they're not in our core business. We raise money for a certain purpose. And I think if other entities want funding, they should go to the commissioners.
The commissioners, at least our three commissioners, would say we would like you to present that to the committee. And then they would give us some recommendations as to whether or not they think this would be. That's why our commissioners, at least on our side, wanted this committee was to evaluate those kind of community requests. So they could go there first. Strongly suspect the commission would kick it back to here to get a recommendation to come back to them. And so that is where ultimately the counties, both sides of the river, would have to decide whether or not they're going to fund these outside requests. So it is going to end up at the commissioners at some point. I just guess I thought of why force people to go to this one and just get kicked back here anyway. No, they're going to end up here, come here first, and then it goes to the commissioners from there.
And that you're probably right, except we could just be sitting here evaluating funding requests from all over the community, from every agency that can't pay their bills.
It's entirely possible. I think that, you know, if it looked that we were doing that, we would, as a committee, want to have a clear statement of what the dollars that we're overseeing are for. And probably could screen out those that did not fit into that category. I would imagine that we would take presentations. We could do the presentations for the next 5 years, and not really get anywhere. So yeah, I recognize that. I do think though that there may be, you know, if people are thinking outside the box in terms of services that can help with crisis services, we want to invite that and encourage that. And if they have suggestions to the committee to consider, I think it makes sense for us to at least have a conversation about it. Not that it's a guarantee that, you know, the committee would fund that, but maybe there's a couple ideas that would stick together that end up being something that hasn't been tried before that might work, you know. So I appreciate that. We don't want to be inundated. I suppose if we had a ton of requests, we might want to create a subcommittee to lead out some of those, but rather than taking up our monthly meeting time to do that.
Chair, as a resident, you know, I prefer that stakeholders who have knowledge and invested interest in the topic are the ones making recommendations to commissioners about how to spend dollars like 1/10 of 1% sales tax related to mental health, right? It makes a lot more sense for it to come and a recommendation to come from a group who has a vested interest in and subject matter, let me be clear, subject matter expertise in that field to help sway or advise the commission's either way. So it's not just about the recovery center, it is about providing comprehensive services in our community.
The question, we're kind of coming off of what John was saying, in terms of trying to think of the term, like project manager or something like that, either on the provider side or on the government side, who would be the person that is the point of contact in terms of, I guess, seeing the big picture, right, and being able to help us as a committee, help the commissioners, you know, to have that vision. Because one thing you do run into when you're trying to do something by committee is you have, you know, 20-something ideas, and all of them are great ideas, but you can't do all 20 of them. And so I don't know. Is that, you know, like,
yeah,
the,
I mean,
help
I,
us
I,
with the big picture?
I think that Matt has done a great job.
Yes,
yes. You know, if you listen to Matt's presentation that he gives on his roadshow around the different city councils and things like that, you know, being able to tie all the pieces together and the different stakeholder interests and what the challenges are and how we've overcome them and tell that whole story, like, it's really compelling, like, you know, in a 20-minute hit. I guess from the where we're reaching the point, though, where for me, what's missing and what Matt can't provide by himself is that, like, if, you know, if you wanted to, with that same 20 minutes, talk about what the next 3 years looks like in terms of the specifics of the facilities, the services offered, how it's going to impact the community, how it intersects with all the existing service providers and things that are happening. And I don't think that would be able to tell that story until Comprehensive came on board. And so I don't know how they're working in that way. So maybe it is Courtney or it's somebody at Comprehensive who's going to help. Or I feel like every one of us on this committee should be able to tell that story, you know, 2, 3, 4 months from now. But it's hard for 17 people to develop that story together, you know. So I have the same question to you. I don't have an answer, but I guess I'm just trying to maybe further articulate some of what I think the need is. I used the term architect earlier, not in the sense of building architect, but like vision architect,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm still learning so much about how these services interact with each other, right? I can't tell that story. Tell it what I know and how far it's gone. So
we could create a full-time job for you.
For sure. But
And let me put some thought into this. Okay, I know we have, Kyle's not here today, but he has a lot of experience in that realm. He might be able to help somebody who can start to point to how those things, these pieces will interact with other services. Maybe it's not just one person, there's a couple of people who do that. Like you said, educate everybody here, and then we can all go out and tell them the story.
So Matt, just for a point of clarity for me, the funding requests that we're speaking of, is it somebody looking for a recommendation from us that would go to the commissioners to use part of that 0.1% money?
Yeah, right.
Well, so I would think that it's, personally, I think it's rather premature to even entertain any of those presentations at all until we have firm numbers from Comprehensive, from our engineers, and from our developers to know exactly what it's going to take to be able to pull this off.
And that's pretty much been the answer from the committee, but we've had two other places come and ask, and that's been the answer before us. This sounds great, but we don't know how much money we actually are going to have until we have the big core thing that we're working on right now figured out, and we don't have those answers yet.
Yeah.
And also, I'm worried about mission creep.
Yeah.
You know, that we, behavioral health can have tentacles in so, you know, 1,000 areas. And that's not what we said we were raising money for.
And I've been very, you know, I get every time a grant opportunity comes out for anything related to behavioral health, I got 500 people emailing it to me saying, hey, we should do this. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. We need to get these 5 or 6 things done. And then we can go back and it's not that they're not needed, and it's not that they wouldn't be great to have in the community, but if we creep too far, then somebody's going to, we're going to drop a ball over here and something's not going to happen. So that may be part of what John's talking about is we throw out a lot of great ideas and a lot of discussions and a lot of things we have, but really all on the same page of what is going to happen in the next 2.5 years to work over this facility, and you know, what do we expect to have? What is the end result? So we should probably start putting that together. So that becomes realistic. Here's the things that are going to happen in the next 3 years. Here's the things that we would love to do some other day. And we will do those things, but it's going to have to wait until the core mission is up and running.
And I think, Claire, we've talked about this before, and you did an update on it, but you know, Bill goes on the dollar form and had a conversation that he was created,
right.
And now they are. And now there's a lot, a significant amount of that that's being dedicated to this effort. So knowing that there may be more money over here that can be allocated, you know, either to enhancing this effort, I think there's different funding sources that are a part of the conversation than that were when the committee was created.
I think to Cindy's point too, it would make sense to be a little bit conservative when we start out, so we're not trying to make that specific bump right up against the top upper end of our budget. That's probably what's going to happen. You're going to have things that we didn't anticipate, or costs are going to go up, and you're going to be trying to figure out how do we cut programs and services, and those aren't going to be fun conversations to have.
Okay. Matt, you also shared, though, that there was an interest in getting some money spent because of political pressure, community pressure. This, we're sitting on this money doing nothing with it, and so then having conversations about, you know, investments that aren't long-term programs and projects that could get us along the way, but, whether it's communications, whether it's things that don't have to be sustaining that can help the process go.
There's a lot of moving parts to that. So.
I think we're in public comment section. Yeah. Any other public comments?
I want to hear from Courtney, how she thinks that first conversation in June went.
It went well. You know, again, it's the tip of the iceberg. And so that's where we started, was talking about, you know, kind of reiterating these are all the things that we can do. And we know there's a lot of other things that the community and this committee have talked about doing on top of that. So Edie and I's task, as Matt described, is to go back and kind of map out, here's all the things that we know to do, you know, in terms of building insurance and contracting and things like that. And there's still a little unknown risk for us as well, because we have to go negotiate those contracts. So those are gonna, that's going to take months and months and months and months. But we do want to try to get for the group some sort of mapping of, here's what we can do. Tell us what more you want. See if there's a way we can weave that in, and then really kind of help identify what, you know, the one-tenth might need to go towards. A lot of it too depends on how the assignment goes as well, because if the intent is to phase open, we kind of need to be involved in that, just because the licensing goes a certain way. DOH might have something to say about active construction when you're also trying to occupy the space. So those are just things that we'll have to get in there. But when we know if we can do that, then we can kind of better conceptualize, okay, here's the rollout plan. But again, tip of the iceberg. We'll definitely, you know, be here kind of describing what the service array looks like, and then, you know, Matt can help get into the detail about those costs for those things that aren't covered under any contract or any funding source for things.
And I am really here, I think, to ever name that in. Nicole? No, this one. Carla mentioned, you know, using the money here and there. AOC reached out to me that it's already the grant funding, and so I'm going to continue with the CJC program. However, we're going to spread it amongst the therapeutic boards that are actually full therapeutic board, right? So she said, you have a 110 money in your community. You should be a part of that. That is what treatment services are, should be covered by for behavioral health. And that's what people let me go to booking. And if the money is needing to be spent, it's going to cover treatment costs. For individuals, cannot afford even managed, cannot afford MRT either. We want to be able to use our best practices in serving the community with those treatments that are needed. And so if we are only covering treatment, then treatment will be to help.
My question is what the RCW says about the 1%. But for? That's my question. The RCW says something about 1% allocated each time. Like, I think for 1 million, yes. The 1% is not going to be advanced. So that's my question.
Yes. So what's with the 1%? How the RCW is written?
It's chemical dependency, mental health programs and services for therapeutic boards is what this is. So
that's the first part of it.
Yeah,
I was going to say there's a lot more there. There's other programs and other camps that are funded out of that are not prescriptive.
So I don't think it's not a one word answer. There's so many things that I've seen that counties and cities that have this are using it for that you know, wow, they got creative and found a way to make this happen using that. So I think for Benton County, at least initially, the plan is the recovery center takes top priority. Beyond that, we will decide what we need to have done.
Any other public comments? Okay, moving on to other business, we have an announcement.
I almost wasn't going to do it, but we have the Recovery Coalition's annual 5K run for recovery is coming up. You can register on our website. It honors National Recovery Month, and any money we raise goes either to our own very minimal operating expenses or to the recovery center. And so we also have a lot of fun. It's a morning at Wade Park in Pasco, and the entry fee is very cheap, and it's not highly competitive. It's not a chipped race where you do your personal time and it gets reported, because we can't even figure out how long the course really is. But we have time.
It's actually a legit party. I went to the first time last year, and it was like, whoa, like, this is
funny.
So I'll send this to everyone. September 16th at Wade Park at Pasco. We have speakers. Usually elected officials will run, and they'll make fools of themselves, and then they'll give a little speech, and it is fun. Then we have open mic. So anybody that wants to talk about their recovery story can do that. We'll stay as long as people want to stay. We also have sponsorships. Organizations, we hope, will sign up to sponsor if you, there are levels, but if they sponsor for at least $250, they can have a table there and talk about their programs there to the crowd. So I'll send this to everybody, and I hope you'll all come and participate.
Thank you. Any other business?
Yeah, I just wanted to give, we had this morning, they call them proprietary meetings. Basically, they're an in-person meeting between a selection committee that does involve a few members from one member from this committee, and then we have a member of the Recovery Coalition and several other people with our design build team. So we received four initial statements of interest along with qualifications. We narrowed that down to two teams that we want to move to the actual proposal process. So this morning's meetings were to meet with those two teams and have kind of a back and forth on the project and our vision for that and what that looks like, and answer questions for them. They did site walkthroughs, I believe, last week or week before. And so the teams have now walked the site, they've met with the selection committee, and they are preparing their final proposals that are due on July 26th. And so we will have proposals from the two teams then. It takes about a week to evaluate them, and there'll be a recommendation going to the commissioners from that selection committee for award to one of the two teams, hopefully August 11th, is the targeted date for that. And so that's moving along very well. The two teams both obviously have great technical expertise. It looks like either one of them would be more capable of this project. And so it's going to be interesting to see what their proposals come back like and what the selection committee decides. So, but making good progress. So we should hopefully have a team at least awarded to in August, and potentially have a contract in September. And both of them have schedules that they've presented that show they want to get right to work. So just want to make sure everybody knew where we're at on the design build side of this.
Any other business? Yes, we're adjourned.